Welcome to Signs of Life, Exploring Survival of Consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I am Bob Ginsberg, and I'm joined by Tom and Melissa Gould. This is the show where we invite you to join in the conversation. We address questions that you have. And by the way, please call in. I mean, a lot of people have emailed questions, and we certainly have a lot of them, but we love it when you call. Because sometimes we learn from you. Sometimes you may agree with something that we said. Sometimes you may not. So we would like to hear about it. If you want to call in, the number is 888-627-6008. And before we get started, just two things. The Summer Solstice Raffle is June 20th is the drawing, so we have 17 days left to get your entries in. There are five fabulous mediums. Sometimes people don't have access to mediums of this caliber, so $5, and who knows, maybe the universe is with you and you get a reading. The other thing is, the grief retreats, you know, there are three of them. There's waiting lists for the grief retreat in Connecticut and in Florida, but there are openings for our October retreat. That's October of this year in California, in Silicon Valley. So the fall retreat information is on our website. Check the events page, foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Don't wait too long because, as you know, these grief retreats fill up pretty quickly. That's all I have in terms of announcements, and let's get right into some questions that people have written in. I'll start from the top. It's been 8 months since my daughter passed. I don't feel her as much as I did, and I want to lose my communication with her. What can I do to keep myself open and receptive to her? I think you kind of answered your own question. You know, I mean, that's about all you can do is to remain open and receptive. We really don't have any control over that. You know, we don't know what your daughter has going on. Probably a lot of good things. you know where she is, and it's really her. You know, she may be still. It's been 8 months. She may still be learning better ways, you know, to get through to you. So. Tom or Melissa, you have any other things to add to that?
Yeah, this is certainly a question that comes up a lot, and we do not have a definitive answer. I mean, we've had people who try and are frustrated, so we don't want to offer any guarantees. But as you said, Bob, keeping yourself open is one thing, and know that the communication is two ways. So don't stop talking to your loved one. Don't, you know, keep talking to her when you can, and hopefully she'll give you something back. Did you want something to?
Well, I always like to suggest that people take note of signs that they may have gotten from their loved ones. And I'm assuming, or I hope our caller will, our questioner realizes that signs come in all different forms. It doesn't have to be that butterfly right in front of you. In fact, for myself, just this morning, I was out of nowhere. I started to think about my mother and an incident that had happened between the two of us. And then I reached for my washcloth And my washcloth, which would have had either soap on it, bubble bath, or shampoo, smelled like gardenias. And that was my mother's favorite flower. And I was like, what is this scent on my washcloth? It was gardenia. And I hadn't even been thinking about my mother, who's been gone now since 2019. So I gave thanks to my mom. I let her know I was paying attention. And I think that's always so important. Say thank you. When you do get a sign, show them that you are paying attention, writing things down. And then hopefully she will get another sign soon and her daughter will know that mom is really looking and listening and paying attention. But please do not give up hope.
Yeah, I agree with Melissa that it's very important. And we think that when you die, you become all-knowing and all-powerful. It's not that way. You're still on, you're on another step in your soul's journey. And so as Melissa said, if you get a sign and you think, oh, I've got a sign, be sure you say, oh, I see it. That's a sign from you. I love you. You know, give me more. And then they know that, aha, that I can get through that way. And maybe that will enhance the experience.
Yeah, I agree. Let's move on to the next question. What is your opinion? Does the same treatment happen to everyone after death, irrespective of their religious and you know, religion and beliefs? So I guess, you know, when we say the same treatment, I guess the question is, you know, where does everybody go to the same place? And I think we're in agreement that in that sense, we all have different treatments. We tend to gravitate to those were that were kind of on the same wavelength, or lack of a better, you know, term. So, you know, maybe people that lived a life of that was kind of sinister and discriminatory and so forth, and with no compassion, find themselves in that same, within that same group. Maybe others who led a more loving life, you know, wind up in a different realm. Others, but I think the point is that no matter where the starting point is, there's this steady, you know, progression. So nobody is doomed or caged or locked into one environment. It's all about a continuum of growth. And the other thing is, you know, religion and beliefs, I would imagine, affect you initially, right? Because if you didn't believe in life after death and then you woke up and you found yourself alive, well, it kind of blows that, right? So your beliefs, you might have some disbelief at the beginning, whereas I would like to think that if you or I were to cross over tomorrow, we know that there is another place to go, so maybe it would be an easier transition, you know, I would hope. So I'll turn it over to you for your thoughts.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just finished a book written by Raymond Moody, who is spent his life studying, researching the near-death experience. People who were clinically pronounced dead, and yet then they were revived, and the stories they tell of what it was like to be almost on the other side. And regardless of religion, their experiences over all religions and ages and that's are very similar. There's the, as we most people know about, there's the tunnel, the long tunnel with the bright light at the end, and then there are your loved ones there at the other side who have already crossed there to greet you. And sometimes you get greeted by them and they say, oh, I'm sorry, it's not your time, you have to go back. And my the assumption is that if you actually die, that that's the path you will take. And then also what happens is there is a life review when you get to the other side. Before I get into that, if you are religious, a lot of people who are very religious will say, my gosh, I saw Jesus there who greeted me, or you know, Muhammad has greeted me. So if that is in your realm, I believe that the universe, especially at that time of crossing over, wants to make it as pleasant and comfortable an experience for you. And if they know that you're deeply religious, then they will bring forward these religious icons for you. And again, what I was going to say, which answers another part of the question, you get a life review, and it's a life review that basically goes through, you feel everything that you've done to somebody else. And if it's loving and compassionate and caring, that's a very positive experience. Because what happens is, not when you see what you've done to somebody else, you feel how it made them feel. So if you made them feel loved and comforted and compassion, you will get that in return. But the people, as Bob mentioned earlier, that's lived a horrible life of abusing and cheating at people, lying and all of that sort of thing, they'll see what that abuse felt like to the people. And when they get that all at once, it's a wake up call, quite literally, in the other realm.
You know, it's interesting. I wrote down before you started to speak, Tom, those exact points.
Oh.
I started with
always. I was looking at your answers.
I started with always being greeted by a loved one. I talked about the facing the life review and exactly the same outcome or the feelings that it will create. And also about the pearly gates. If that's your indoctrination due to religion and you think you're going to meet Jesus when you die, I feel that you will, whatever your interpretation might be. But I also feel like after that life review, especially if you've lived a less than honorable life, that will then determine what's going to happen next on the other side. That you will be starting to see the error of your ways and have the opportunity to correct them in whatever form. We don't know. We could call it school, but we really don't know, other than higher masters are at work.
Yeah, and I'd like to add one more thing to directly answer the questioner, who is obviously deeply in grief over her daughter. The one thing that's also very universal in the near-death experience is that when people are sent back to Earth, a lot of them are really angry because it is so beautiful, so wonderful where they were, with so much love that they've never felt, that they don't want to come back here, that it's better there. So a lot of people, of course, especially a parent, wants to know that their child is all right on the other side. And, the testimony is pages and pages and volumes of people who said it was great and they prefer it over there. So hopefully that can ease your mind a little bit.
Okay. Here's a question. Are souls infinite, meaning can you cycle through lives forever, even though you've learned all you can from previous lives? Does a soul eventually die off and become new again? I like to think that there's an end game, you know, where it's not a infinite cycling. You know, I think that it reaches a point where you've learned what you need to learn, and then you enter you want to call it a period of enlightenment, you want to call it a higher sphere, but you are elevated to a point where it truly, you know, is bliss. I mean, that's what I would like to think. And as to does the soul eventually die off and become new again? And I don't think our soul ever dies. I think the soul just continues on no matter what realm that we're in. And that's why we're still able to communicate with people that are in these, you know, elevated spaces. So if you disagree, feel free.
I don't at all disagree. First of all, I feel that you do come back as much as you need to learn, but it's not forever that you keep coming back. I think I'm kind of unique in this. I haven't seen anything to back this up or anybody else saying it, but I also believe that you could possibly come back to Earth simply for the experience. If you're an advanced soul, because there's certainly a lot of people walking this Earth that you hear them say, well, they're an old soul, that maybe they don't have anything to learn, but they just wanted to come back. Maybe it's for the compassion. Maybe it's just to help out. For me, maybe it's just to have fun, to enjoy. I've often said this physical life is like an amusement park, and it's a thrill ride, and a lot of people want to take it just for the thrill ride. And as far as I also agree, the soul doesn't die out. There's another concept which is fairly prevalently accepted, is that the universe is an eternal energy. The energy of the universe is eternal. It will not die out. And we are all part of that energy. That's the real thing to know, that we are not individuals, even though we're both inhabiting different bodies, and people we don't even know are inhabiting bodies, but we are all connected to that one energy. We have that energy within us, and we can draw on that energy if we want to, but we all have that same energy. So once you're done with your physical experiences and you have elevated to being pure energy, and I guess to the higher enlightenment, the higher you go in your enlightenment, the closer you get to being actually just one with that energy. I guess that's the Buddhist, the nirvana, where you become one with the universe.
And I don't really have anything to add to that other than I believe through reading with Eckhart Tolle that one energy is really what the word God means. I know I tried to tell my mother that, who was not religious, and she got kind of annoyed with me saying, well, nobody else thinks that. But I thought that was a pretty good explanation. We're laughing because Bob has a friend who likes to make a mustache with its tail.
can't get rid of this guy. All right. I used to be an avid dreamer and remember most of them. I lost the love of my life, my soulmate, last year, and since this loss, he came to me the night he passed to tell me the exact time he passed, which was different than the death certificate. I have also had a couple of glimpses here and there through the year, but not really any significant dreams like I used to. Is there an explanation as to why all my dreaming basically stopped, or why I can't remember them? It's a good question. It's a common question. It happens to a lot of people. I mean, I used to get a tremendous number of these dreams. I don't anymore. I haven't been getting any dream visitations, lately. I don't know, the answer. I mean, I think, we have that our loved ones in spirit have to have a clear channel to get through. If you're grieving, or you're discombobulated, or you got a lot of things going on, or you're stressed, maybe it makes it more difficult to get through. Maybe those jumbled dreams, take over, and our loved ones are saying, hey, I'm trying, So I think, but having said that, we know there are a lot of reports that people don't get them. and they don't get them for years and years, and all of a sudden they get a really profound, dream visitation. So there's no explanation, there's no rhyme or reason, it's just, as we said before, just remain open and remain positive that our loved ones can, will come through again. And as Tom and Melissa mentioned before, thank them, when they do come through, and invite them, perhaps that helps.
We once heard, I don't know if it was through spirit or just a wise person that said, well, if you've got wonderful dreams, imagine that you just want to stay in bed and keep having those dreams and you wouldn't get up and accomplish anything, which is why we are here. So, sometimes dreams are hindering.
Yeah. Another simple question came in. Are we going to meet again? At first I thought maybe it was a solicitation, but I assume, the question is, are we going to meet our loved ones, in spirit again? And we definitely think that we will, and the evidence points that way. I mean, Tom was talking about, near-death experiencers, and a great majority of them report seeing their deceased loved ones, who were there to greet them. So we certainly believe that we're going to meet our loved ones again.
Yeah. Having just read about all the NDEs, that's a common thread. And, right. And a lot of the medium readings that we have seen, they talk about, well, I'm up here and I'm up here with Joe, he's here with me. So they always talk about that, the people they're with. I could tell a short thing about when my mom was diagnosed and she knew that she had terminal cancer. We had a reading with a medium for which her birthday fell between her diagnosis and when she actually passed. And my father came through, who had been passed, and he talked about he was planning a big party and learning his dance moves, getting ready for her to come. So I fully believe that, yes, you are going to meet up with those that you most want to see. And then another thing that I want to say about that previous question of the dreams, we have been immersed in this whole science and exploration of all of this, and we do try out all the methods that have been recommended to us, and I can say I've had maybe 5 dream visitations in my entire life. So it's something that happens. It's wonderful when it happens. You remember it for the rest of your life, but it's not all that common. So as Bob said, invite it in, ask for it, thank that it happens, but don't hold your breath.
And I'd like to add that unlike our upcoming high school reunion, where we won't recognize anybody, when you're in the spirit world, you will know your loved ones immediately, and they will know you.
Right. All right, here's one. In 2013, my father passed away the night before his wake. I couldn't sleep, and I woke up, and I was sitting on the side of my bed, and just as I was ready to stand up, I looked down on my lap, and I saw lots of glowing bright lights hovering around my lap. I looked all around in my bedroom to see if something in my room was illuminating my lap, but there wasn't anything. When I realized this was strange, I kind of panicked and left my room as the bright lights dissipated. What could this be? A couple of things there. First, we have to mention that there could be a physical explanation, for it. I mean, the moon could have been bright that night. There could have been a neighbor with a floodlight on or whatever. So putting that aside, from the non-physical explanations, your dad is an entity of energy and light where he is. So that's the way that our loved ones would manifest with like an energy source, which would be light. So we can't discount the fact that that was his way of communicating with you. The other thing that's interesting is, so if you were getting a visitation, the first thing that you did was you panicked. Yeah. You know, so, you know, you're getting a visitation from your loved one. And I understand that's not the way we think in physical terms. We're taught to be fearful of things that we can't explain. We're fearful of the unknown. So I understand that there's a fearful reaction that a lot of people have. But when you think of it, you put it in perspective and you think of it as this is possibly a visitation from your loved one. If your loved one saw that you were scared and ran out of the room, we wouldn't want to persist in that. So of course he would leave. So my suggestion would be to embrace it if something happens like that and not run from it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point because it shows you how difficult it is on the other side to send a message back, because they don't, that's exactly what they don't want to do, is frighten you. So how, you know, does a butterfly flying in your face, is that enough? But it doesn't actually register a lot of the times. Or do you come out with something, the bright lights, and then you're scaring the person. So they're trying to find out where their parameters are that they can show you that they are still around and love you without making you fearful. So that's where it's a two-way street, that you have to let them know that you appreciate it and that you're open to whatever they want to bring to you.
I remember discussing this topic with my friend Carlene, and she said, oh, I don't believe in any of that. She goes, after my father died, he appeared at the foot of my mother's bed, and she screamed and said, don't ever do that again. So this was Carlene's interpretation of, I don't believe in this stuff.
Yeah.
It must mean I don't want to.
Yeah.
But what about that wonderful incident in the docuseries Surviving Death on Netflix? I believe it was in episode 4, where the woman recognized her mother in the cardinal that landed on her.
Yeah.
And wouldn't leave. When do you ever see something like that happen?
Yeah.
Right.
So that was in more concrete than what this caller talks about. But still, it could come in any form.
You know, I'm appreciative of all these questions that come in, you know, that start off with thanks, you know, to the foundation. I really, appreciate that. Here's one that says, you know, love you people. Was there ever a time when there were more believers in life after death, such as the belief that our loved ones have never really left us? FFF is maybe a true believer, and I know my family's still around, but why are so many people skeptic? So I would say, yes, there was a time when there were more believers than not in life after death. We have to learn what we've forgotten. I'll plug Dr. Betty Kovach's book, Merchants of Light, and if you read that book, you'll see that we went through tens of thousands of years and ages of mysticism where the belief was common knowledge, you know, that not only that our loved ones still survive, but we were able to commune with them on a regular basis. So we once knew that, science happened, you know, religion taught us otherwise and so forth. And over the years, it got these abilities that we had got weaned out of us. And maybe perhaps that is our meaning in this physical existence, to rediscover what was inherent to us all, you know, at one time. I think that so many people are skeptic, because it's ingrained in us, you know, our clergy tells us one thing, our educators tell us something, our scientists tell us another thing. And our family tells us, you know, and if we can't see it or touch it or, you know, or smell it, it doesn't exist. And that's why we're skeptical. But we're trying to change things at Furrow Family Foundation, and we're not the only ones. So I think that as time goes on, maybe we will rediscover once we want to know.
I hope so.
Yeah, there's two schools of thought in the physical world. There's the ego, and the egoic mind is all about selfishness, about power, about greed. And the mindful side of things is about being one with the universe, and the power you get comes from the universe. Well, the egoist does not want to know about somebody else having power, and certainly not more power over you than they do. So it was an active suppression of this kind of thought that led to, what we're experiencing today of people not believing.
Yeah. Here's one, and we're taking your questions. And by the way, if you'd like to join in, you can call us at 888-627-6008. Here's a comment, a little lengthy, but maybe I could shorten it. But first, I want to thank you for being a forum of support for myself and others in times of grief. I'm not so sure I'd be able to cope without you, so I'm grateful for all the services you offer. Thank you. I'm wondering why signs are so cryptic. Well, they are for me anyways. Is it that our brains are just not functioning at the level they are on the other side? As an example, I recently had a reading with a medium, and she told me that she was seeing balloons. She asked if there was a party. I told her no, but balloons were significant because a couple of days after my loved one passed, I was walking and there were random red balloons with hearts in my path. It was winter, so it was quite unusual. Interestingly, I was reading a book about signs the night before, and there was a red balloon in the story. I like to think that the balloons were a sign from my loved one, and I like to think that my loved one showed the medium balloons so that I would know the balloons were from her. Getting back to my question, why is the communication from the other side not more clear? Instead, I'm relying on faith that she sent the balloons to show me that she loves me and that she's still with me. Yeah, I think we hear you. You know, sometimes these signs are very subtle. Melissa just, you know, referenced the story. Sometimes they're not so subtle. I mean, the red cardinal that lands on you. When was the last time you saw a cardinal land on somebody and stay there and refuse to leave? So that I think that's an example of a strong and powerful communication. But others, like the balloons, are more subtle, and it all goes to what you believe. I mean, if you saw the balloons and along with that experience was the knowledge that you knew that it was your loved one, then you take that as a significant sign. But I would agree that most of these synchronicities and signs are not powerful, but we still pay attention to them, and it's the cumulative effect of all of them. What do you guys think?
A couple of things. Number one, again, when someone crosses over, they're not all-powerful, all-knowing, so it's up to them to learn how to send a sign to you. And if the best they can do is a balloon, they're doing that as number one. Number two, in the question, you had an interesting phrase there that I think is very important, that you said that you think the balloon's from them, but you don't know, you're relying on faith. And that is a key, because having faith is a powerful tool that you have in your physical existence. Having faith that you are part of the universe, that the universe has a power that flows through you, that faith is good for you. So by giving you a cryptic sign, it increases enhances your faith and ultimately enhances your existence here.
I think we also have to remember what we've heard from a lot of mediums is that they've developed their own sort of sign dictionary. And when they're shown balloons for one medium, that may equate a party or a birthday, or, you know, they might say a red rose means, I'll say them wrong, but, you know, one would say an anniversary, and a yellow rose might be something else, but that's their own dictionary that they've created. We might recall that our Forever Family Foundation certified medium, Angelina Diana, had that she was interpreting what she was seeing to her sitter as a gentleman whittling a piece of wood, and the sitter could not understand what that meant. And Angelina kept saying, no, this is what I'm seeing. And then she finally physically held up her hands and described what she interpreted as a whittling of wood motion. It was someone chalking up their cue stick. And when the sitter saw that hand motion, that's my father. He was, you know, he always was playing pool, and that's exactly how he chalked up his pool cue. But if that conversation hadn't continued like that, it would have just been an uncertain, lost bit of information.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially the part about the mediums, the way they communicate. You know, there's the expression, oh, she talks to the dead. Well, she doesn't really talk to the dead. The dead's not necessarily talking to her. It's more of they're showing them, as Melissa said, they're showing them signs that, you know, one of the mediums described, it's like watching a movie, and then they put up these images, and then I report the images back, and they're significant or not. So it's not that they can just, hey, tell my brother this. No, they're showing this, these images. So the red balloon, now that you say, well, that red balloons, that's my loved one. The loved one is going, aha, there's something that works. And spirit with a medium knows that they have a police officer, a police badge to significance, signify something. So when they want to communicate, they put that badge up, and the medium goes, ah, I know what you're trying to tell me. And it's the same for you. When they send you a sign, if they know that you got the sign, then they know I can use that sign. So that's the thing. And Melissa's said it often, that if you keep a journal, a sign journal, that when you think you've seen a sign from your loved ones, even if it's not, you're not sure, you think, well, maybe, write it down. And every time you see something that you think is from your loved one, write it down. And then after a month or a year or something like that, you look back at the journal and you start to see patterns and repeats. And you go, oh, okay, this is how they're trying to communicate with me. And again, it's meeting them halfway. Whatever you can do, raising your vibrations, you know, calming your ego-centered mind. These are things that will make it better for receiving communication.
Here's I read this several times. I kind of resonated with a lot of what it says. I mean, it starts off with some kind words. First and foremost, I'd like to thank and commend you, all the beautiful souls which are associated with this phenomenal foundation, the incredible work, the tireless efforts of the Blazing New Trails brings a little more hope and light into this uncertain world. In the past 5.5 months, since I've lost my partner of 40 years to COVID in December, I found myself on this unusual and ambiguous spiritual quest, and indeed how I initially found your incredible organization. A few common themes I continually encounter are the peace and love our departed ones are surrounded with, that they watch over us, that they are just on the other side of the veil, that love never dies. In the scheme of things, why does this seem like one giant platitude? If indeed they are with us still, why is the design of this universe and our existence that is apparently so full of love leave us with such pain, heartache, and loneliness? While death is indeed the natural order of things in our physical world, what's the value of such a design that initiates such suffering? God needs a more reasonable sense of humor. Thank you. And there's a lot in there, and you know, this came from Gary, and thank you for the question, Gary. But I have a lot of thoughts on the subject, and I don't even know where to begin. But my personal opinion is that the suffering that you feel and that many of us feel is not by design. I don't think there's some entity that said, okay, Gary's going to suffer, or Bob's going to suffer, and so forth. But suffering is just not planned, and I've talked about this, and we all have various opinions, but, I kind of think that, crap happens. Sometimes it happens due to genetics, sometimes it's due to circumstances, sometimes we're in the wrong place at the wrong time. But the key is that life here is not permanent. We're all on this train that we get off at various stops, but we all get off. And our life after this life depends upon how we handled the suffering and how we handled the misfortunes and how we handled the joys and that's what the life after death is all about. I mean, this stuff is going to always happen, and we can't see the meaning to it, but we see the meaning later, so to speak.
I like what you said, Bob, about how we handle it. There's a quote that says, "Circumstances don't make the man, they reveal him." And I think it's these things that are thrown at us and how we cope with them. That's our growth, how we grow as spirits.
Yeah, I agree totally that it's kind of a learning experience. I often use an analogy that you're at an amusement park and you go into the fun house and your loved one has left the fun house already and you're there in the dark feeling scared and, oh my gosh, where do I turn? How do I get out of here? Now, if your loved one brought a flashlight in and showed you, you'd walk right out. But the whole idea is that you have to learn how to find your way out. And you can sit there in the dark saying, it would be so easy for you just to turn a light on, I could get out. But we're not here for easy. We're here to learn. And I apologize because it does not make things any easier,
no,
I'm afraid.
No.
Yeah. Let's move on to another question. Let's see. This is more of a statement, I guess, than a question. I have been visited by my departed loved ones many times now. I always know without a doubt who is visiting. I can feel them and an overwhelming feeling of love and warmth. I'm always begging them to stay, and I'm reaching for them as they eventually slip away. They never speak, but I'm left feeling so peaceful. There is no doubt in my mind that these visitations are real and not just dreams. On one occasion, all of them came to me in this beautiful array of light, one after another. They were all there, and I knew who they were just by their presence. However, there were some I didn't know, but I got the feeling that they were ancestors. I'm not sure, though.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I would hold on to that feeling and thought. It's like a warm hug and a knowing. You just know. And that's so hard to tell people who haven't maybe had that experience, but you just know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that, she talks about the beautiful array of light, one after another. So, our loved ones appear to us as light,
Yeah. With the NDEs, since I just finished this book, he brings it up. When they talk about seeing loved ones on the other side, they always say that they were glowing, that they were glowing light.
And that's what your mom said when she awakened from a nap in her armchair and your dad was kneeling before her.
Right.
And she just described him as being like a golden glow. And then it dissipated, and she just wanted him back.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting, you know, she ended with, there were some that she didn't know, but she got the feeling that they were ancestors. So some might say they were spirit guides, you know. Some might say that they were, you know, messengers, you know, or angels. And of course, you never met your ancestors, but you have this inner knowing. So you, that's why you got the feeling that they were your ancestors, because they, my guess is that they probably were, you know. It's,
yeah.
And it goes to show that, you know, people, it has nothing to do with time, right? And if your ancestors, this is in physical terms, chronologically, this was maybe hundreds of years, but there they were, you know, part of you. And showing up, you know, when you needed them most. So, or they came to you for a reason anyways in your dream visitation.
And that's also a point, again, with the NDEs, that they talk about people telling them things when they're on the other side. But they also say, well, they didn't speak. They weren't telling me in words. Mm-hmm. They were doing it telepathically. I just knew what they were saying when they said, it's you're not your time. It's time to go back. They didn't say it in words. They just communicated it telepathically.
Let's see. Rosa writes, my home phone rang only once. When I picked it up, I saw the word dad on the window of the phone where you are only supposed to read a phone number of the person calling. Now, she said, I haven't seen my father in years, or communicate with him or anything. My parents got divorced when I was 5 years old, and he has not been in my life at all. Was this a sign that he died? Was he trying to contact me? So I think that, you know, it's similar to another question that we had. Of course, there's the physical explanation that he did try to call you and he's alive and he misdialed or whatever reason. But we hear of many, many reports of people that leave such a sign when they do pass, a clock stops or a message appears on an answering machine or just what you saw, something pops up on the phone. So that's a possibility, you know, as to was he trying to contact me? Well, it's also possible that he's alive and he was thinking of you. When we know that we're all interconnected and we know that synchronicities happen. So, and we know that our minds are not confined to our inside of our heads. So there's a lot to unpack there, a lot of different possibilities.
I know. And with all of this that we're talking about, where is logic? You know, maybe nothing really makes sense in our human brains, but in our soul group, anything could have meaning.
Yeah, I had a similar situation. My mother passed in October of 2010. And in January of 2011, I was talking to Melissa, and I mentioned my mom, and my cell phone rang. And I went to get it, and it only rang once, and I looked at it, and it said, unknown caller, but it was, the time on the phone, the timestamp was 11:11, and here it was January 11th of 2011, 1-11-11 at 11:11, I get this phone call from an unknown caller. And I immediately thought, well, that's my mom, because we were just talking about her.
Yeah, we had been talking about her.
So it's a leap of faith. You know, any scientist will say, well, it's a coincidence, but any medium will tell you there's no such thing as a coincidence.
And bottom line, how did it make you feel?
It made me feel like my mom was there.
Exactly.
All right. Here's a question. Where do you see the direction of science that science will go in the near future regarding the research into consciousness. you know, I'm kind of both excited and somewhat troubled when I think about it, because I'm happy that scientists are now studying consciousness seriously. Although many that study consciousness don't necessarily believe that we can get information from non-physical means. You know, a lot of the consciousness studies today have to do with artificial intelligence, and, you know, they're looking for ways that the, you know, that the mind can affect our bodies, you know, and so forth. But what I hope that leads to is the realization that the brain and the mind are not the same. And in the process of their formal research that's motivated by money and invention, we discover the realization that we're a lot more than our physical brains, and consciousness is so amazing, you know, beyond our wildest dreams, and that we'll discover the mechanism that allows all these things that we're talking about, you know, tonight. I think it will happen. I don't know if it's going to happen in my lifetime, but I think it's inevitable that, you know, that's going to happen. What do you guys think?
I kind of like being a part of this best kept secret and enjoying what I know that you know it's your loss if you don't believe it. And I know I do hope, for the foundation's sake and the sake of the world, that they can embrace this someday. But right now, I'm okay just knowing what I know.
Well, I want to take it on a broader scale that I do think, you know, there was talk of, you know, the Mayan calendar, which ended in 2012, and everybody figured, oh, 2012, it's going to be this major thing. But no, it was 2012 indicated that the tide that had gone out in our awareness has now turned, and the tide is coming back in. It's, you know, the last era was 2,000 years, so it's not going to happen. We can't all sit up at midnight on 2012 and watch the new tide come in. I mean, when's the last time you went to the beach and tried to watch and say when the tide changed? You know it changes because you come back and it's there. Well, the new tide, according to the Mayans and many other beliefs, is that it's the age of awakening, age of Aquarius. We even sang about it 30 years or 50 years ago. There's an age of awareness. You will also find that, you know, as we have, that there's a medium on every street corner these days. And I think that's part of it, that people are becoming more aware. They're becoming more sensitive to communications, to the other side of the veil, if you will, and that is only going to increase. In fact, one of our best mediums keeps saying, you don't need me, you can do this yourself. And I feel that maybe not in our lifetimes, it might take 10, 15, 20, 100 years, but yes, I think humanity will be able to communicate for themselves, and they will know this for themselves quite definitively.
And as we mentioned, it's not something new that science is going to have to discover. We already knew it. We just have to relearn it. You know.
Well, explaining in logical or in physical terms, that's the real key. I mean, our brains can't really handle the actual explanation, so we have to break it down into bits that we can understand. And this is where I come to it from, because I'm an academic. I was in the math and sciences, and the one science, you know, the very first law of physics is energy cannot be created or destroyed. So, well, this energy that is my life energy can't be destroyed. So when I die, that energy is not destroyed. So there's my number one to say, okay, I'm going to hang my hat on that, and let's go from there.
Okay. All right, I think we have, it's about that time. Let me read our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.